We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and I want to ask you a question. What do you think is the single most important component of a marriage? Revolving around this, usually if you can master this, you can have a beautiful married life. If you fail, as most men do, then you find married life to be difficult.
Words are, yes, dear.
No, yes, Yaakov. Communication, Gershon says. What do you say? Communication. So yes, our topic today is going to be speech, talk, conversation. So let's begin with the Medrash. It says, Chayim v'mavet b'yad lashon. Life and death are at the hands of the tongue. So it says that Yoav, King David's chief general, couldn't understand why is speech so important. Life and death at the hands of the tongue. He was the top soldier. He was the chief general, Ramatkal of David HaMelech's army. He knew how to wield the sword. Life and death are at the hands of the sword. No? David HaMelech, why do you say that? Chaim v'mavet b'yad lashon. The verse in Proverbs says, right? Yeah, so says the following story. Says there was a man who was commissioned by the king to bring him, what? Bring him milk from a female lion, a leopard. What's female lion called?
Lioness.
Okay. So the king got very sick. He asked the doctors. They said he needs milk from a lioness. So there was one advisor who said he could do it. He went out and found a lioness with her cubs. And he took a bunch of sheep, and day one he sent her a sheep, and she devoured it and gave it to her kids. And after another day, he brought her the second sheep. And every day, he slowly got closer and closer to the lioness. Until finally, he would bring her the sheep, and she would wait for him to bring the sheep, and he could pet her. And it reached a point where he not only could pet her, but she would allow him to milk her. And he milked her, and he took the milk, and he started heading back to the king. And he went to sleep en route, and he has this jug of lioness milk ready to bring the king. And he has a weird dream. And in that dream, his body starts talking, and his legs say, boy, are we great. If not for us gauging exactly how close to go to the lioness, your whole body would be dead. And the hand said, boy, are we great. If we wouldn't know exactly how to touch the lioness and how to milk the lioness, none of this would have happened. And the heart says, boy, am I great, because I knew when to have courage and when to step back. And every part of the body is arguing. And finally, the tongue says, it's all up to me. And none of you could do anything without me. So every limb in the body looks at the tongue and says, who are you? What did you do in this? What did you do? You sweet-talked the lioness? And the tongue says, listen to me. It's all up to me. With me or without me. You're alive or dead. And the limb said, yeah, prove it. So the tongue said, you'll regret it. Okay. And he wakes up and he thinks back to his dream and he says, boy, what a weird dream. He comes to the king and everyone's excited. He comes in and the king says, what do you have in that jug? So he says, I brought you the milk of a kalbita, of a female dog. So the king says, what? And his advisor says, yeah, we've been funding this whole project, sending him sheep every day for the milk of a kalbita. So the king says, throw him into the dungeon. Tomorrow we're executing him. And before the man could say another word, they whisk him off into the dungeon and he's put in shackles. And he's crying, and he doesn't know what to say. And there in the dungeon, he weeps bitterly and falls asleep. And as he falls asleep, he has a dream. And the limbs start talking again. And the tongue says, well, guys, who's the boss? So the limbs all say, you're the boss. You won. So the tongue says, if you concede that I won, then I'll get you all out of it. So the limbs say, okay, you won. Get us out of this. So the guy wakes up, and suddenly he calls the guard, and he says, there's been a tremendous misunderstanding. Please bring me back to the king, because I have exactly what he sent me for. So the guard takes him back to the king. He says, Your Majesty, the man says there's been a misunderstanding. The king says, What's a misunderstanding? He said, Kalbita. So the man says, Yes, but where I come from, the word Kalbita also means female lion. I'm sorry, I brought you the milk of a female lion. And if you don't believe me, drink it and you'll see you'll feel better. The word Kalbita, the king, one of his advisors, says, Yeah, in our dialect, Kalbita actually also means a female lion. So the king says, Okay, we'll try. They take out the milk, he starts drinking it, he starts feeling better, and the man is justly rewarded. So this story is an important story to remember. We tend to underestimate what our tongue can do. And the truth is that most of marriage revolves around the tongue. Most of parenting revolves around the tongue. And most of our relationships with our parents, with our siblings, revolve much more around the tongue than around anything else. We all yearn. We live life wishing someone would tell us a good word. Someone would tell us how great we are, like Mark Twain once said, when people compliment me, I'm always disappointed. And deep down inside, as much as they compliment me, I feel like they haven't said enough. And then I'm embarrassed that I feel that way, but I do. So Mark Twain revealed something real. That's the way us human beings are. We yearn for appreciation. We yearn for connection. It says in the Pasuk, Ulven shinayim mechalav. The description is, his teeth are white from so much milk. Our sages say, Levin shinayim, showing the white of your teeth, smiling to someone, making them feel like you're happy to see them, is more than if you've given them a glass of milk. Because a glass of milk, other people might give them. How many people will give them the feeling that they're happy to see them? And we yearn for it. All of life, we yearn for it. And the greatest tool you have in marriage is your speech. Now, you guys are a very mature group, so I am going to mention something which I've never mentioned before in this setting. And I can't elaborate on it because this isn't the Chassan class. When you guys will be Chatanim, you're welcome to give me a call and we'll try to sit for a little bit. But I will just make mention of the concept. Our classes, and we will talk about speech for at least a month, meaning at least the next three classes will be dedicated to conversational styles, to how to build connection with our wives through speech, how to work out a fight, how to criticize, how not to criticize, how to compliment, how to show appreciation. We will discuss the many different aspects of speech because it is a central theme of the Jewish home. But there's one thing which we won't discuss, and I'll just mention it now, and that is that the tool of speech is probably the most powerful tool in marriage. And men become mute, especially in the bedroom. Meaning, especially when it comes to romance and intimacy. So there, men have a hardship expressing themselves, and that's something that has to be overcome. It's not within the nature of many men, most men, and so that's something that to think about. But we will not discuss that. That's not the realm of our classes. So our sages say, the Talmud in Tractate Kiddushin says, Asara kabin shel dibu yaredu l'olam. There were 10 measurements of speech that came down to the world. Women got 9 and men got 1. So women have a greater tendency to talk than men. They have much more to say than men. So for every 1 sentence you say, she's supposed to say 9. Okay, that's the measurement our sages set. Now, let's take an example of where speech is important and where we tend to overlook it. There's a famous joke about a couple who comes before the judge, and hey, it's not a joke. It's a true story. I just remembered who it happened to. I heard it originally as a joke, but then I heard the true story. Okay, so I'll tell you the true story. There's a very famous rabbi living here in Israel who is quoted as telling the following story. Again, some people quote it as a joke. I just remembered I heard the real person who said it. He thought, as a rabbi, he should also do a little bit of marriage counseling. Until the following couple came before him. And the wife says she wants to get a divorce. And the rabbi says, why? And the wife says, he never tells me he loves me. So the rabbi turns to the husband. And again, this is a rabbi that's still living with us today. And asks him, is this true? So the husband looks at him and he says, I don't know what she wants from my life. When we entered the cheder yichud, I told her, I love you. And if something would have changed, I would have told her. The rabbi said, when he looked at this man, he looked at himself. He said, I'm not fit for the job. He said he stopped doing marriage counseling. When he heard that line, he said, okay, you win. I don't know. Okay, fine. Someone else has to help you guys. A woman has to hear many times that you love her in an hour. There's a need. The Torah says that a woman is yearning for hearing those words from her husband. She has a yearning for her husband. And a man has a tendency, like Ruth says to Boaz, spread your cape over me. Spread your wing over me. There is a natural inclination that he likes to spread his wing over her, and she likes to have his wing spread over her. Now, she could be very successful, and she can do a million things in the world, and she could be very smart, but at the end of the day, they both want to have that feeling. So, she needs to hear it. And man's tendency is not so far from that guy, you know. I said it once, you know what, I have to say it again. So, if they speak a lot, they also want to hear a lot. And that's also difficult. So I'm going to give you one challenge now. Last year when we did this series, I used to give one challenge in each class, something to work on in the coming week. And that helps us develop parts of our personality. So I'm going to give you one challenge now, which you could work on this week. It goes as follows. Imagine for a second that when class ends, you come home, and your wife asks you, how was your day today? What would you tell her? You would tell her, I got to morning class a little early, a little late. It was very interesting. I missed a few points. I got to afternoon class on time. I was just a little tired, but it was very interesting. It was great. And the nighttime class, you're going to tell her that was great. Remember that, yeah? Okay, but that was a joke. You're allowed to laugh. Next, so at any rate, notice how the male tendency is to focus on facts. Now, how would a woman tell over what her day was like? How she felt, right? She'd come in and say, I walked into class and I was a little late and it felt so embarrassing to walk in front of that whole class late. And I always wondered, does it annoy the teacher? Doesn't it annoy the teacher? And as I sat in my seat, I tried to overcome that feeling, but I could sense myself a little bit red. You know how it feels like to be a little bit red when everyone, you walk into class and everyone's looking at you? So that's what I felt like. And I was sitting there in class and I tried to focus, but it was just a little painful trying to focus when I was feeling so uncomfortable showing up late to class. Now, the teacher was talking, and you know, you zone in and you zone out. So I tried to zone in, but you know, it's a little hard in the beginning. And I looked around me at the class, and you know, the feeling that everyone's looking at you because you walked in late, and you try to tell yourself they're not, but you're not really convinced, and you're not really sure, so you try to ignore it, and you say, I'm a mature adult, but... Notice how much she can talk about one emotion. You've already finished describing your whole day. She hasn't finished describing the first 5 minutes, right? But that's the way it works. They have 10 times as much. We're going to discuss their tendency to speak about emotion. So your challenge for this week is try every night to describe a part of your day, to talk about your feelings about the part of your day. Wow. Now, this is a phenomenal tool which we will explore later on in this series. I'll give you a simple application of this tool. Imagine you told your wife you'd be home at 6:30, and you show up at 7:30. So if you're like the average man, you do not want to feel bound by marriage. So there's this innate desire not to call and tell her I'm going to be late. Now you tell yourself, I'm a big boy, and if I'm late, then obviously there's a good reason. And you don't want to feel like, I have to tell her why I'm going to be late. Am I going to have to apologize? Am I going to have to explain myself? So you don't want to do it. Now, you've heard in all the marriage classes, they always tell you, you're going to be late. Call, tell her you're going to be late. Send an SMS. But man has this innate desire, I will not call. And then when she gets upset that he didn't call, so he gets upset that she got upset because he knew she'd get upset. Come on, he heard it here. He's heard it 1,000 times. But he's upset. Why is she upset at me? My little boy, doesn't she trust me? Doesn't she know that if I'm late, there's a good reason? Now, half the time, there isn't a good reason, but that doesn't matter, right? We won't tell them that. We've convinced ourselves it was a good reason. It was a very important article I was reading in the... I don't even remember what I was reading. But it was a good reason, right? Okay, we've convinced ourselves.
I was late.
But here's what you could do. Imagine you're stuck in traffic. You left in time, we'll say, to get there on time at home. And you call home, and you don't say you're going to be late. You tell your wife, you know, I'm on the bus, and it's so stuffy here. I'm standing here, and there's no available seat, and everyone's cluttered all around me to the left, to the right. I can't even take off my coat. The heating's on. The driver won't turn it off. People won't open the windows because, God forbid, some of the heat should go out. I'm standing here in my coat and I can't take it off. Traffic isn't moving. There's this driver in front of us that if only he'd move, we could move, but he's convinced he has to stay in the left lane driving 30 miles an hour. The right lane isn't moving at all. And I wish I were home. What did you just do? You had a conversation about your feeling for about a minute and a half. She spoke her language, and what's she going to say? What you really wanted to hear. She's going to say, oh, I feel so bad for you. Right? That's what you want to hear. Now, if you'd walked through that front door, and you had all the good reasons in the world, and you didn't take the time to talk to her language, so what's going to happen? She's going to have that stern look on her face, and you're going to feel like, I just dealt with the hot bus. Sitting on there, not moving. I tried to be home on time. I left work early. I did what I could. And now I have to come home to face the Wicked Witch of the West. You know? So you're not going to say all that. But that's what you're going to feel like. But you could have precluded it. If you would have just called and spoken her language, it would have been a little different. So your challenge for this week is try every night to have a conversation that's not natural for you. To discuss your day. Call your mother, make her day. Tell her a little bit about what your day was like. Okay, you can't call your mother, call your grandmother. I don't care, call your aunt. Call someone and talk to them for a few minutes about what your day was like because most men don't know how to do this. And then wives are so frustrated. He doesn't tell me anything about what his life is like. And men are frustrated because they feel like they're living parallel lives. They never connect. Because we our speech is so different. Now, I want to add one more point. The nature of man is that when his wife starts talking about all those details about her emotions in the day, so then he loses patience. And the first time and the second time and the third time, it takes him about 5 seconds to lose patience. By the 10th time, he doesn't have patience when she just opens her mouth. So that's why you'll see all those pictures of the husband with the newspaper and the wife is talking away during breakfast and he's, yeah, dear honey, sure, whatever you say. What was that again? Pass the toast, please, right? You guys grew up on the same cartoons I did, right? So you've seen those pictures. So in our day and age, it would be the cell phone. You know, he's talking to her as he's flipping through his emails. No. The first message you give in a conversation... And that's step number one of any conversation. The first message is, I'm listening. You're important to me, and I'm interested in what you have to say. And I want to give you challenge number two, which is really hard. But you can do it. Next time someone who you don't feel like talking to tries to talk to you, try looking them in the eye and listening and being sympathetic. Try it. Now, I'll tell you something. This is what a madrich has to do. Okay? A madrich can't love everyone. He's a human being. Right? Some people he jives with, and some people he doesn't. But when a guy comes and says, you know, I got a problem in my room, what does he have to do? He has to say, tell me about it. And he says, you know, my roommate, he gets up on time. and I want to sleep 5 minutes later. And it's not fair. Who gave him the right to get up on time? And the madrich looks at him and thinks, like, is he for real? But you have to be sympathetic suddenly. You know, the guy, he's serious. You think he's joking, but he's serious. You know, davening is so slow at the Mahon. He could get a 5 minutes late just like me and still make davening. And now what's worse is that he thinks he should brush his teeth before he goes to davening. Now the madrich has to look at him in all seriousness and try to empathize. But wait, what's so terrible? Wait a second. It really bothers the other person. I don't live his life. I don't view life the way he does. But to him, it's real. It's serious. You know, my three-year-old came over to me and said to me, I am not going to invite you to my wedding. So I almost burst out laughing. But to him, he was serious. He was coming and telling me, I'm upset at you, Abba. So what do? You say, really, why? What happened? Okay, now he's going to tell you. You gave me a cookie and you didn't give me another one. So you look at him and you say, okay, but I didn't give your siblings another one. He says, yeah, but I really wanted another one. Now he's serious. Okay. But our job is to understand him. I don't have to agree with him. I don't have to give him that other cookie. So what does the average male do? The average male looks at the three-year-old and says, well, next time I'm getting married, I'm not inviting you either. Right? That's what they, you know. So the boy looks at him and says, oh, but please don't say that. And on his wife says, for sure don't say that. Okay, but that's, we have to change. I have to understand him. And even though I'm not, you know, I gave a simple example of a three-year-old. But when our wives come and talk to us, so then we turn off. And part of the reason we will expand on this next time is because the conversation begins like this. I have to tell you what happened today. Can you sit down for a second? I don't know how to put it into words. It was really annoying. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with this anymore. And you're sitting there and you're getting all antsy. And it seems like, you know, on the one hand, she seems very excited. And on the other hand, you're not exactly sure what she's about to tell you. So you sit there very focused, trying to understand what she's saying. And she says, you know, some things you could deal with in life and some things are just beyond our capacity to deal with. You're like, uh-huh. You're waiting for the punchline. And now she's going to spend 5 minutes introducing what she's about to talk about. And you're sitting there and after about 20 seconds, you're like, what are you trying to tell me? Wait. Don't give in to the temptation of saying, huh? Yeah, I'm listening. You're going to pull up the screen. I'm with you, honey. Yes. No, you're not. Because it's not natural for us to talk their way, so it's not natural for us to give the focus to them. It's not natural for us to listen with intensity. The first thing in a conversation is, I'm with you. Not to say the words, to really be there. To make eye contact. To shut the cell phone. What's the biggest mistake parents make today? I got a smack in the face. I think it was the harshest smack I ever got in my life. I had to discuss something with my daughter. So Shabbos afternoon, I said to her, let's go for a walk. We walked for an hour. And she came back home and said to my wife, she said, I only like walking with Abba on Shabbos. Ooh, why? She said, then he didn't have his cell phone on him. After all the preaching, I got that from my daughter. I was like, knockout, gamarnu, she won. It's a message, right? It's a tough message. She said, I want to walk with Abba only on Shabbos.
How old is she?
How old is she?
She
is nine. She's nine. She's nine. But that's such an important message. The first thing you want to talk to a kid, she doesn't realize, that's why I said to my wife, I said, she doesn't realize that the other times I'm not walking with her, I'm on the phone, I happen to be accompanying her. Meaning there's a flip side, when I want to talk to her, I leave the phone home. In her mind, I'm on the phone a lot, it's true. So sometimes when I'm on the phone, I'm walking with her. It's not that I'm walking with her and I'm on the phone, there's a difference. When I want to be with the kids, I leave the phone home, I shut the phone off. There are times when I'm not with them, it's true. I'm not. I have other obligations. I'll walk with them, but I'm not with them. Technically, I'll be somewhere else. But if I'm with them, if I have to be with them, the phone isn't with me. When I sit down to talk to a child, don't knock. You could call. I'm not going to answer. The big, most important message you can give a child is when you shut that phone and you sit down to talk to them. So she doesn't remember it. That's why it was such a smack in the face to me. I said to myself, okay, obviously I need to do it more often. I'm not doing it enough. But with our spouses, step one in every conversation is, I'm with you. Not to say the words, to really be there. You're important. The message we give is, you are important. If you ever try, you could do it with a bus driver, you could do it with a taxi driver, you could do it with a person who's cleaning the streets. Try once telling them good morning and asking them their names and calling them by their last name, Mr. So-and-so, not their first name. Try it. Try giving them real attention. How are you? What? For sure. You give people that respect, you'll... Yeah, I know. I know people always tell me. I used to take a bus that had an Arab driver named Anati. And we were on first name basis. Because every morning, I'd say, Boker Tov, Anati. And when his route switched, I treated him like a human being. Yeah. And if he'd see me coming to the stop, he'd wait with the bus. No. It doesn't matter what country you're in. People want to have personal treatment. Everyone wants it. We want it, and they want it. It takes an investment. The first message in every conversation is, am I with you or not? None of you would want to be sitting here right now if my cell phone was on, if I was looking at my cell phone. There have been numerous times where I had no choice. When I circumcised the kitten, I had to make sure the bleeding stopped. I had a cell phone here. I could tell in all your focus, none of you were as focused in the class. Right? This past Thursday night, I needed to know if everything was okay at home, if there was a blackout, if I had to explain to them how to turn on the heat. Even though I was here, the cell phone was here, up here with me. None of you were as focused. I didn't have a choice, but that doesn't change the fact. There's a different feeling when you feel like someone's with me or not with me. Even if they're 95% with me. If they're 95% with me, then I'm 75% with them. So our topic that we're opening now, and we will discuss, because there are many, many aspects to this topic, is speech. And step one in speech is that simple respect that you're focused with the person. And we just described part of the reason why it's so difficult for us men to be focused. Because what we really want to tell our wives is, get to the point. Can you say it in 10 words or less? That's what you want to say. But we just described that for every one word you say, she has 9. And we will discuss at greater length why they speak so much, why it takes them so long to get to the point, why their conversational style is so difficult for us, and why us men have such difficulty connecting to women in speech. On a date, you could barely make it, but when you get married, it becomes 10 times as difficult. We will analyze why and how to overcome it. Today we ended with 2 challenges. Number one was the challenge to have a conversation about our day and maybe even focus on some emotions of the day, what was difficult, what was pleasant, what was nice, what wasn't. That was challenge number one. And by the way, when you're married, it's a good idea to try to have 5 to 10 minutes every night doing this, talking to your wife about your day. And your feelings about the day, right? And number two, we said, is the next time you have an opportunity that someone tries talking to you, who you really don't want to talk to force yourself to have that conversation and be focused with the person. Okay? That was challenge number 2.